Succession number 28756, reel 4.
Okay, Doug, yeah.
All right. Yeah. And we went on further, and we went to, Escoville. Well, we went into Escoville, and they were waiting for us. And we had a full company at this time, apart from the 13 injured and 3 killed. So, less 16 men, we had a full company. And we went in there, and we run into the 21st Panzer Division. And we came out of Escoville with a platoon and a half. And we really took a place in there. Several times after that, we tried to get in and get any of our people that might have been wounded laying there or our dead back. But every time we went in there, we hit something and we come out of it. But we never did give up Erevalet. And
street to street, house to house fighting.
Oh yes, yes, yeah. And when we were in Escoville, they said to us, "Get out, every man, get out as best you can," because that's when we took a place in there. So we got out, and we got back up to Erevalet. And we waited for them to come in there, and every time they come in, we managed to push them back.
These were tanks, or were these...
No, we were lucky to... In Escoville, they had tanks, and some of our blokes were in the ditches, and they ran the tank... enough said. They ran the tank down the ditches and just crushed them. But we went from there... We were then moved from there, from Erevalet. Other troops come up there. Moved from Erevalet to a place called Château-Lacombe. It was a wooded area with a chateau on it. And we dug in over there. It had been to 51st Island Division, had been there at some time or other. It was dead everywhere. Anyway, we dug in there and was there. In total... until we started moving forward again for about 2.5 months. But then we started moving forward and we went to on the River Maas in Holland.
Before, I want to not quite go so quickly. That no. period that... So you've been through this and the battalion's taken a real pasting and you're only, what, platoon and a half?
Yeah.
40 men?
Yeah.
40 or 50 men left?
Yeah.
And...
that's in my lot, you know.
Out of?
There was 181 men went in.
About 50 came out.
Yeah.
Right. And then you're there for 2.5 months.
Months.
And what are you doing in that time? I'm curious to get this sort of atmosphere of talking to people.
Well, we were dug in there, right. And the Germans were just over the other side. We can hear them. And all we used to do then was defending that line, holding that line, so that the troops could move around and up through Caen and up that way. And what we used to do was to go out on the fighting patrols, see if we could capture a prisoner and bring him back for interrogation. Some of us used to go down on a listening post. We'd creep out at dusk. We'd get to this listening post. And we'd stay there all night and come out before dawn and just listen to the conversation of the Germans. And when one bloke could speak German in each time we went up there and listen to the conversation.
And how would the listening post work? You'd be...
Well, you just went in there and you kept as quiet as possible, which was very difficult because there was a little swamp in there and it was full of mosquitoes. We're getting bitten alive, the damn things. They give you some cream to put on your exposed parts, but I think they enjoyed it. But it was on one such occasion as this that Sweeney took the group up for listening posts and he got wounded. He got shot in the leg. I never saw Sweeney anymore until after the war because he was sent back. He was badly wounded in the leg. He went back. And when he got over his wounds and rejoined the battalion, he came back in the mortar battalion, mortar company. So we never saw him anymore. And we had a replacement, a Canadian fellow took us over. And as I say, after all, we stayed there all that time. It was really just a holding position up there then.
And the conditions were that you lived in dugouts or?
Yeah, we'd lived in dugouts. We'd half covered with logs, so that when the airburst shells come over, and there was a lot of those, you could get underneath and you wouldn't get hit with this shrapnel. But that was when poor old Chesty Fletcher, Sergeant Major Chesty Fletcher, he had a fear of tanks, old Chesty, hell of a nice fella. But he had gammon bombs there, a sticky bomb which you're supposed to stick on the side of a tank, round the outside of his uncovered part. And he had the company runner with him. And they started sending over some airburst shells. He pushed the company runner in first, and he went to get in behind him. And this shell came over, burst above, and blew this gamma bomb into the middle of his back and killed him outright. Blew half his back away. And they dismantled the trench. So we dug him out, got him out of it, got the other bloke out. Young fella. Forget his name. And got Chesty on a stretcher, and they took him away. And this bloke that I told you about couldn't read or write, Bertie Roach. He seen him being taken away, and as he was taken away, his arm fell off the side of the stretcher and it started to swing. And in typical army humour, he said, "There he goes, the old devil, regimental to the last." But there you are then. As I say, we moved on from there to the River Mars, and then we were withdrawn out of the line. We came back to England, to Pulford Camp, and on returning to Pulford Camp, out of the 181 men that left Pulford, there was 40 of us left. And then we reinforced up from the reserve company that was left behind, and carried on our normal training again, had a leave, got us to give us a leave, come back, started our normal training again.
What was the feeling like being back in the
Britain? Oh, wonderful.
Because now you could see that the war was going your way.
Yeah, it was going our way.
You'd been part of
it. And we'd been part of it, and our job that we'd done was so vital, and that us little band of brothers had actually done it. And we'd taken them and held it, and we'd done it. And it was a wonderful feeling. It was a wonderful feeling. Great sense of achievement. And the French people have never forgotten us for it. In that area, they treat us extremely well. And then
You go back to Britain, you're given some leave.
Yeah.
You go home, I mean,
Oh, yeah, I went home on leave. And
could you talk about it?
Not a great deal. No, not a great deal. In fact, none of my family knew what I did during the war at all until I moved down here and became a member of the Parachute Regiment Association, when we've all been the same and we all started to talk about experiences and that. And then it come out, and of course then my son said to me, "I didn't realise you were there, Dad." I said, "No." I said, "Isn't there something I don't have to talk about?" I said, "I'd done it, and that was it, you know." I said, "But I'd no reason to talk about it before, because there was none of my kind around to talk to." You know, Sam, when you've got with your own kind, you've got an affinity with one another, and you talk to one another about the things you've been through. But no, none of them knew. None of them knew. The only one that ever knew anything about anything at all was my poor old mum who received a telegram, unfortunately, from the War Office saying that your son is missing in action, presumed dead. But she had immediately had a stroke and was in hospitalised, only to receive a letter later from me that I was alive and kicking.
Do you have any idea why this
happened? No, it may have been that we may have been cut off at some time or other, and somebody made a list out and that went off, and I don't know, but I was alive and kicking, and my father said then, he said, I told you he'd be all right. Devil looks after his own. Well, that's it. And then, as I say, we stayed in England until the Germans broke through the lines of the Americans in the Ardennes. And we rushed out there one Christmas and to hold the line out there. And that was purely a holding position out there. We were just out there.
You weren't flown out there in gliders?
No. It was just went out by seeing trucks. The only thing about that operation that I can remember was the cold. It was so cold. They brought up the old grey coats, you know, what we used to wear. Because we were dug in outside. And we used to wear these grey coats when we went into the dugout to guard, you know, the position. And when you came off duty after 2 hours, you could stand them up in the corner. They were frozen solid. And we used to have a rum ration before we went on and a rum ration when we came off. And then we used to go out on patrols in white suits and through the snow and what have you.
And did you have any contact with...
No, we didn't, no. Never had no contact with them at all. We were just in a holding position there. Then we came back to England because we lost no men at all. We came back to England again. And, of course, they were moving on through then. And it was a case of going to cross the Rhine. And this wasn't just a company attack. This was several battalions going in on gliders. Royal Ulster Rifles, South Devons, Ox and Bucks. And my battalion took off and landed near the Great Autobahn. And that was sheer murder.
Can we just get a date on this, if you can? This would
The Rhine crossing, what date would that be?
It was something like March, February.
Oh, gee, I can't. Dates elude me, I'm afraid.
That's all right. I should know that date, but I don't. Anyway, it was the
right.
Yeah. So
we take off from England, from what's the name, and we go over the Rhine.
You take off from where, sorry?
England. And I can't remember the place we took off from then. But that was a mass going over.
So you flew from England?
Yeah. Towed, a mass lot going over.
Towed by?
Right, the aircraft, Halifaxes, Dakotas, anything that was available. And at that time, most of the glider pilots were RAF pilots, because we'd lost so many glider pilots during the French occupation. And Montgomery put a smoke screen over the Rhine to cover the assault with the barges. The smoke drifted on to our DZs. The fighter boys went in to knock out any ACAC. Couldn't see nothing. Smoke cleared away. We're coming in over the top. 75% casualties on landing alone. 400 men of my battalion are buried over there in the cemetery.
What do you remember of it?
I remember the carnage. There was gliders smashed up and on fire. They were landing on top of one another, and they were landing in the woods. They were smashed to pieces. It was sheer carnage. Not a thing I like to remember very much. It was terrible.
But your glider landed okay?
I was lucky. It broke up a bit, but I was lucky. I got thrown out through the side, but I was all right. And then we moved on and dug in near the Great Audubon. And then we started to move forward, and the Germans were pulling back all the time then. And we fought our way up through Germany until we linked up with the Russians on the Baltic coast.
That process of fighting up through Germany, you didn't go down towards Berlin. It was that sort of...
No.
One of the big mistakes, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
People discovered afterwards. That business of going through the German countryside up towards the Baltic, what was that like? Did you actually make much contact with the German people?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. And the worst lot we ever come in contact with were Hitler Youth. And they were holding a farmhouse. And we had to kill every one of them before we could get through there.
And these were just boys?
They were boys. But they were so fanatical. Yeah.
They weren't even trained, were they?
Fanatics. That's all they were. But as I say, we fought our way slowly up through there. And of course we came across different places. One day we came across a railway siding. We'd had all these trucks in and all these refugees in the trucks. And no food. They looked like skeletons, half of them, you know.
What nationality were they?
Polish. A lot of them were Polish. That's where I learned a few words of Polish. Dobry wieczór. Dzień dobry. That's about the only words I knew, but we were not allowed to fraternise with them at all. As I say, we moved up there, right the way up through there, and fought our way up through Germany. Took a lot of casualties on the way.
You were fighting again, troops, German
troops that were... German troops pulling back and we were moving on. And
what
we
about
fought...
German civilians? What kind of... How did they...
They were very subdued. Very subdued. Frightened. Frightened of what we were going to do to them.
Was there any looting? Looting?
Oh, there was looting. Yes, I'm afraid so. Which is the spoils of war, as they say, isn't it?
Can you remember any specific...
Yes. We moved up through one place and it got into this village, small town. And there was this place, it was all locked up and boarded up. And, of course, the boys broke in there, and it's where the Germans had bought back all the stuff they'd looted and stored in there. And this mate of mine, named Les Wood, he found some diamonds all wrapped in cellophane. There was loads of them there. And he took a packet of these diamonds and he took them in somebody's pocket. And, but after the war, he took them into a jeweller's to get a price for them. And the jeweller reported him to the police. I told the police. And the police came into the shop and said, "Where did you get them?" He said, "I picked them up in Germany." True, he did. They said, "Well, you know you're not supposed to have this sort of stuff." He said, "Well, they were lying there." He said, "So I just took them." Anyway, they confiscated them. They didn't charge him, so he got away with it. Poor old Les.
Might have been his pension. Could have been a pension for him.
Yeah. Anyway, we finished up on the Baltic coast, as I say, with the Russians. And that was a very hairy time.
Tell me about that. I think it's fascinating. It's not very well known about that period of those.
Well, we got up there. And the Russians at this time were going around with their lorries and they were picking up all the women, taking them back to their camp. And at one time, we were lined up one side of the road and the Russians were lined up at the other. And it was touch and go at one time because they wanted to come into our sector and take these women and we wouldn't have it. And they weren't, the troops that we met up with there, they weren't regular Russian troops. They were these Mongols with bloody bandoliers hanging all over them, grenades hanging all over them. And it wasn't until somebody come from the proper Russian, well, I call the proper Russian army, some officer, and he sorted it out and took them away. And it calmed down, but it was touch and go for a little while. And then we were just escorting thousands and thousands of German prisoners back to prisoner of war camps. And
had you heard about the concentration camps by this stage?
Oh, yeah, we'd heard about them, yeah.
You hadn't crossed any of them on your...
But I never got near them. At one time we were moving up and thought we could smell something, but probably could. But I never had any contact with them, thank God. I would have hated that.
And how were you encouraged to treat the German prisoners of war you had as...
I treat them with dignity, respect, which we did. We didn't abuse them. They were too downtrodden to be abused, to be quite honest with you. They just shuffled along, you know. They were totally defeated, and they knew it. And we just passed them from one sector to the other as they went back down the line. And then we came back to England.
And this had the war finished?
The war finished when we linked up with the Russians on the Baltic coast. And the word came out that the Germans had surrendered.
Was there a celebration?
Oh, yes.
Can
yes.
you describe that? What happened?
Well, this time the Russians invited them to their place. And the vodka flowed very free and fast. And we well and truly got drunk, it must have been. But it was a good time. And
do you remember where this was? Don't remember the name of the town?
I think it was up near a place called Bad Kleinen. And some of them had sore heads the next day. But and then we're told we were going home. And they moved us back down the line, and we came back to Blighty. And when we got back to Blighty, they said, right, you've got to hand in all your uniforms. You're going to be issued out with KD.
KD being?
Khaki drill.
The tropics.
Yeah. You're going out the east. Oh, Jesus Christ. Not Japan. And then the order come through that the East trip was cancelled. We were now going to Palestine because the trouble had broken out there between the Jews and the Arabs.
And this is now the sort of...
1945.
Late part of 1945. Yeah. And weren't you thinking, God, I just want to get out now. I've done my bit. I want to get back to Sibley Street.
Well, in actual fact, no. I would have signed on. But I had problems at home. With my father and my mother, there was problems there, domestic problems. And my mother wrote to me and begged me to come home. And loving my mother as I did, I went home. But I had been up before the CO, commanding officer, because it wasn't in them days, I mean, it was a new bloke named Tillett, Colonel Tillett. I'd been up before him and he'd asked me to sign on. And I said I would love to, but I've got problems, domestic problems at home. I must go home and sort those out. And I never did sign on. But I was promised a promotion. I was a corporal at the time. I was promised promotion immediately to sergeant with the prospect of being a sergeant major within 6 months.
And then you would have become an officer.
I would have become, I would have gone on, you know, but I didn't.
Because you were still a young man, you were in your early 20s.
Yeah, yeah. So I've regretted it all my life that I didn't sign on, because although there was bad times, there was good times as well. And I thoroughly enjoyed army life. I was made for army life. I liked the discipline. I liked the regularity of it all. I liked to know what you were going to do and when you were going to do it. It was me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I was just sorry when I was demobbed in October 1946. But that was it.
Your experience in Palestine, can we go through that briefly? So you're back in Britain now. And
yeah.
And you've got this domestic...
Can I?
Oh, of course, yes, yeah, sure.
If you don't mind,
not
I'm sorry.
Not at all, not at all. Okay, so you're back in Britain and you're being...
Yeah, we shipped out to Palestine. And we were out there, we were trying to track down the Haganah, which was the Jewish terrorist organisation, which incidentally was run by the first Prime Minister of Israel.
Ben-Gurion.
Yeah, Gurion. Mm. And he was the leader of the Haganah. And we used to have to go all over the different places. I was in Haifa. I was in Tel Aviv. And Gaza. And in Tel Aviv, we used to be up on top of the roofs of the flats and the shop flat there, watching down all around. And then I was in Jerusalem. And while we were in Jerusalem, we had armored cars. And we used to go down the streets of the old city, part of the old city. It was terrible conditions down there. And they were the real Orthodox Jews down there with the caps and the ringlets down the side. And they used to barricade them up. And as we went down, they used to throw rocks at us. And we had no reason to shoot them. So what we used to do, we used to have self-heating tins of soup in them days. And you'd just light a fuse on this. Goes down through the can, eats the soup up. We might put two holes in it, let the steam come out. So we didn't do that. We just left them, never punched the holes in. And when they started to rock and roll about, I'd pick them up with a bit of rag and sling them up in the air. By the time they got over the top of them, they used to burst. And this scalding hot soup used to come down, and they used to run like hell then. But that was one way of getting rid of them without doing any damage to them, you know. But we used to have to go through all the different settlements down by the Dead Sea. There was a settlement down there looking for arms and ammunition. And the women, it was always the women who tried to stop you going in these settlements. But we used to find, like, if I can explain to you what you're saying, the Great Escape, where they used to dig tunnels under the ground. The same thing happened in these settlements. They used to have something over the top of the hole. And when you got down, there was all these bunkers underneath with arms and ammunition in it. And, of course, we just blow them up. And, we did a couple of blokes got shot.
What was your feeling there? Did you get angry with this?
I did. Yeah, I did. I thought, well, Christ, I know. We fought the war because of you people, and here you are shooting at us. I just don't know. You know, it was a funny feeling, really. Some of them were all right, but these Haganah people. I mean, they blew up the King David Hotel, as you know, and they blew up several other places, and. It was annoyance more than anything else. They were just an annoyance. They weren't a threat as such, but they were a damned annoyance that we were out there when we could be home in England, out there trying to sort this lot out. And, you know...
Did you feel sympathy for the Arabs?
I did. I did feel sympathy for the Arabs. They were having a rough time of it, you know. They were just taking what they wanted from them. And I'm afraid this is a lot to do with the trouble out there today, that they've taken so much away from the Arab people and not recognised them as a nation. That's caused so much friction amongst them. And it's what is called today the Arabs being so defiant. Now they've got this love a lot in power out there. I think they're going to start to show it too. Yeah.
So you're then in Palestine for how long?
I was out there for just under 18 months.
It's a long time. Were you waiting for your demob to come through?
Yeah, I'm number 41.
I don't understand that. What does that mean?
Well, that was 41 group. That was you was given a number according to when you joined the army. You were given a demob number. And when your number come up, you went home. I had a fortnight's leave in Cairo while I was out there, where I was supposed to be given some information about a trade.
Sorry. Doug Allen, Reel 5. Okay, Doug.
I was given some information about a trade. And I, for this fortnight, during the day, there was army place in Cairo. And it was sort of a leave camp. But during the day, we used to have to go on these lessons. And I'd learnt about painting and decorating. It was supposed to help you when you got out of the army. But it's just a con to get a bit of leave, that's all it was. But as I say, then I came back to England. And I was demobbed and went on the army reserve for 2 years, which we all had to go. But I couldn't settle down. I could not settle down. It's too tame for me. So I joined the Merchant Navy. And I went to sea for 2 years. I sorted the problems out at home between my father and my mother. And then I went down to Liverpool on a stoker's course, and I qualified in coal and oil, and I went to sea for 2 years, and I never did have an oil burning ship. Everyone I had was a coal burner. And
so you were shoveling coal?
Shoveling coal. That's what built me up here.
And how did that experience, I mean, that was enough for you?
Oh, that was enough. I'd done 2 years. And after the war, they were buckets, some of them, because a lot of shipping was lost, as you know. I was on one boat called the Anthony Enright. And the only way we could steam was that one of the engineers used to sit on a stool near one of the upright pumps. He had two upright pumps pumping water into the boiler like that. And every time he got to the top of his stroke, he'd tap it and knock it back down again. Oh, my God, it was a bucket. It was 16 of us paid off when we got the port after that. But I had 2 years at it, and then I thought,
did you travel?
Right.
I mean, were you travelling?
Yeah, I travelled all around the place. I went to Sweden, I went to Germany lots of times, Hamburg, up through Hamburg. I went to Sweden picking up timber, up through the Adriatic, picking up timber and coming back. Oh, God almighty, what a time that was.
And you didn't think after that, because you could probably have still gone back into the...
I could have done. I could have still gone back in the forces, but I don't know why I didn't. But there you are. There ends the story, I'm afraid.
Okay.
That was my lot.
Well, very, very good. Thank you very much. That's a good place to end it. Great.
Right. I hope that's been some...